The Gemara Broadcast with Rabbi James Scott Trim. Gemara is the Aramaic word for perfect, full-grown, mature, or complete. Gemara is a new kind of broadcast aimed to educate and edify Nazarenes, and at the same time appeal to rabbinic Jews, reclaiming Yeshua for Judaism. And now, your host of Gemara, Rabbi James Scott Trim.
I'm James Trim, and welcome to this week's episode of Gemara. Gemara is a different kind of podcast. No other podcast that I know of takes you through a study of Talmudic passages or Mishnaic, Midrashic passages in relevance to Second Temple Judaism and what was happening with Yeshua and the Nazarenes in quite the way that Gemara does, starting with the Talmud or the Midrash as a base text. If you're interested in these kinds of studies continuing, we need to hear from you. We need to know if there's an interest in this or if we're just spinning our wheels and we need to put our efforts somewhere else. So let us know if you're listening to Gemara and if you're benefiting from these studies. We've been in Sanhedrin, Tractate Sanhedrin, and we've been studying the Gemara to the Mishnah, Sanhedrin 10:1. Mishnah Sanhedrin 10:1 says that all Israel has a part in the world to come, and then it goes on to delineate, in contrast, those that don't have a part in the world to come. And as it goes forward delineating who doesn't have a part in the world to come, the most important thing it delineates, or the one that we've been dealing with in this Gemara, is those that say that the resurrection is a doctrine that is not taught in the Torah. This is, of course, a reference to the Sadducees. And so this Gemara, which runs roughly 10 pages in the Babylonian Talmud, from around page 90 to 99, this Gemara deals with the resurrection, largely. However, around page 95, I believe, we covered this earlier, in fact, in the very first broadcast of Gemara, about halfway through, there's a transition which quotes from Amos 9:11, talking about how the tabernacle of David falls and is risen back up again, and this is taken to refer to the Messiah, and therefore to indicate in context that the Messiah would die and then be resurrected, which is why our subject will shift then to the resurrection. So don't tell anybody. The Talmud here in this Gemara very clearly teaches the concept of a Messiah that dies and is resurrected. Now, we've been going through the first portion of the Gemara, that portion which deals with the resurrection, the doctrine of the resurrection. Actually, I think it's probably around page 97 that transition takes place in transitioning to a discussion of the Messiah based on Amos 9:11. I want to deal this week with a passage in the Gemara on page 96b that's very, very interesting. It has to do with the culmination and the waiting for the time of the resurrection and how the justice of Elohim and the judgment of Elohim is just building up and culminating for this final time of release at the time of judgment, of course, tying in, obviously, with the time of the resurrection. And so those that are awaiting the resurrection are therefore awaiting the justice, especially those who have been victims. And this is the subject of our Gemara. It says, in the reading from the Babylonian Talmud, Sanhedrin 96b, Nebuzaradan, after that he saw the blood of Zechariah seething. "What is this?" cried he. "It is the blood of sacrifices which has been spilled." They answered. Then said he, "Bring some animal blood, and I will compare them to see whether they are alike." So he slaughtered, this is speaking of Nebuzaradan, he slaughtered animals and compared them, but they were dissimilar. "Disclose the secret to me, or if not, I will tear your flesh with iron combs," he threatened. They replied, "This is the blood of a priest and a prophet who foretold the destruction of Jerusalem to the Israelites, and they killed him. I," said he, "will appease him." So he brought the scholars and he slew them over him, yet it did not cease to boil. He brought schoolchildren and slew them over him, still it did not rest. He brought the young priests and slew them over him, and still it did not rest, until he had slain 94,000, and still it did not rest. Whereupon he approached him and cried out, "Zechariah, Zechariah, I have destroyed the flour of them. Do you desire me to massacre them all?" Straightway it rested. Thoughts of repentance came into his mind. "If they who killed one person only have been so severely punished, what will be my fate?" So he fled, sent his testament to his house, and became a proselyte. This is a reference to a story that we find in 2 Chronicles, chapter 24, verses 20 through 21, where Zechariah, the priest and prophet, is martyred. And this is corollary, if you will, to the story. A much more detailed account of this same story appears in the Jerusalem Talmud, but in a totally different tractate, in tractate Tanit 69. Page 69. And I'll read the entire account because it's got some additional information that's very, very interesting and I want to follow up on. Rabbi Yochanan said, 8,000 priests were slain for the blood of Zechariah. This is, of course, the Zechariah that was, as we said, martyred. According in the temple, according to 2 Chronicles 24, 20 through 21. Okay. It says, 80,000 priests were slain for the blood of Zechariah. Rabbi Judah asked Rabbi Achan, where did they kill Zechariah? This is important, and I want you to remember this, where it happened. Was it in the women's court or in the court of Israel? Neither in the court of Israel nor in the court of women, but in the court of the priests, and they did not treat his blood in the same manner as they were wont to treat the blood of a ram or a goat. For of these it is written, he shall pour out his blood and cover it with dust. But it is written here, the blood is in the midst of her. She set it upon the top of the rock. She poured it out upon the ground. That is referring to Ezekiel 26:7. But why was this? That it might cause fury to come up to take vengeance. I have set his blood upon the top of a rock, that it should not be covered. They committed seven evils that day. They murdered a priest, a prophet, and a king. They shed the blood of the innocent. They polluted the court. That day was the Sabbath and the day of expiation. When therefore Nebuzaradan came there, that is when he came to Jerusalem, he saw his blood bubbling, and he said to them, "What does this mean?" They answered, "It is the blood of calves, lambs, and rams, which we have offered upon the altar." He commanded them that they should bring calves and lambs and rams, and said, "I will try whether this is their blood." Accordingly, they brought and slew them, but the blood of Zechariah still bubbled, but the blood of these did not bubble. Then he said, "Declare to me the truth of the matter, or else I will comb your flesh with iron combs." Then said they to him, "He was a priest, prophet, and judge, who prophesied to Israel all these calamities which we have suffered from you. But we arose against him and slew him." Then said he, "I will appease him." And he took the rabbis, and he slew them upon his blood, and he was not yet appeased. Next he took the young boys from the schools and slew them upon his blood, yet it continued to bubble. Then he brought the young priests and slew them in the same place, and yet it still bubbled. So he slew at length 94,000 persons upon the blood, and it did not as yet cease bubbling. Then he drew near to it and said, "O Zechariah, Zechariah, you have occasioned the death of the chief of your countrymen. Shall I slay them all?" Then the blood ceased and did bubble no more. Now this is a very interesting, significant Talmudic story that appears here for a purpose. And that purpose is the story of the blood crying out for vengeance at the death of Zechariah in 2 Chronicles 24:20-21 serves the purpose of uniting the death of Cain and binding it together with the Cain of the death of Zechariah. You see, this begins with the blood of Cain in Genesis 4, verse 10, that says, "The bloods of your brother cry out from the altar," cry out from the ground, sorry, Genesis 49:10. And the word there for blood is in the plural in the Hebrew. And so there is a discussion of this fact earlier in Mishnah Sanhedrin, in Sanhedrin 4, section 5. It said, "The bloods of your brother cry," Genesis 49:10. It does not say "the blood of your brother," but "the bloods," plural, "of your brother, his blood and the blood of all those who were destined to be born from him. Another matter, "the bloods of your brother and his blood was splattered upon trees and stones. Whoever destroys a single Israelite soul is deemed by Scripture as if he had destroyed the whole world. And whoever saves a single Israelite soul by Scripture is as if he saved the whole world." So we have this concept that the murder of a single individual is as if one has committed all murders. There's a reason for that, one of which is that when you kill a person, you kill not only the person that is there, but the future generations that might have arisen from their seed later in life. In addition to that, there is simply the principle that one who commits a murder is as guilty as if he had committed them all. And so this is why we have this sense of the blood crying out for justice that begins in Genesis chapter 4, verse 10. Interestingly, this idea of the blood crying out from justice, starting all the way back to Cain, is also found in the apocryphal Book of Enoch. In the Book of Enoch, chapter 9, verse 10, and for those that are interested, we've published a new translation of the Book of Enoch, which, wherever possible, translates from the Aramaic fragments that were found among the Dead Sea Scrolls. And you can get that at our bookstore at www.lulu.com/Nazarene, N-A-Z-A-R-E-N-E, or going to nazarenespace.com and clicking on the Take Hold Books icon. Okay, so chapter 9, verse 10 says, "And now, behold, the souls of those who have died are crying and making their suit to the gates of heaven, and their lamentations have ascended and cannot cease because of the torahless deeds which were brought upon the earth." These are those, in this case, that died after Cain, but as a result of the unrighteousness of the Nephilim and the murders committed by the fallen ones who, in Genesis chapter 6, that saw the women, that they were the sons of God that saw the women and saw that they were desirable and came down and copulated with them, and they and their descendants killed many people. The next occasion is in Enoch 22:7, 1 Enoch 22:7. "He answered me, saying, This is the spirit which went forth from Abel his brother. Cain..." Well, let's go back to verse 6. "And I asked Raphael the watcher and set apart one who was with me, and I said to him, This spirit..." we should go actually, to get the context, go up to verse 5. "There I saw the spirit of a dead man making suit, and his voice went forth to heaven, crying unceasingly and making suit. And I asked Raphael the watcher and set apart one who was with me, and I said unto him, The spirit which makes suit, whose is it? Whose voice goes forth and makes suit to heaven? And he answered me, saying, This is the spirit which went forth from Abel, or Havel, whom his brother Cain slew, and he makes his suit against him until his seed is destroyed from the face of the earth, and his seed is annihilated from among the seed of men." And then finally, the first two verses of Enoch chapter 47, "And in those days shall have ascended the prayer of the righteous and the blood of the righteous from the earth before Yahweh Tzavaot. In those days the set-apart ones who dwell above the heavens shall unite with one voice and supplicate and pray and praise and give thanks and bless the name of Yahweh Tzavaot on behalf of the blood of the righteous which has been shed, and that the prayer of the righteous may not be in vain before Yahweh Tzavaot, that judgment may be done unto them, and that they may not have to suffer forever." So there is this repeating theme throughout the Book of Enoch, that from the murder of Cain forward, the blood of the martyrs and the blood of the victims of murder have been collecting and culminating and crying out to Elohim for justice, and that cry is not yet been satisfied. So the Talmud, in giving this account concerning the murder of Zechariah near the end of the book of Second Chronicles, unites this murder that takes place with the murder that takes place at the beginning of the Tanakh. Now that's very important, because in the Hebrew ordering of the books, of course, Genesis chapter 4 is towards the beginning, and 2 Chronicles in the Hebrew ordering of the books is the last book of the Tanakh, and chapter 24 is towards the end of the book. And so you have the first and the last murder account in the Tanakh. So what we are reading here is about the culmination, by talking about all the murders that were committed in the Tanakh. The idea is conveyed to us of all the murders that were ever committed, which is why the word blood is in the plural, bloods. in Genesis 4:10, and it binds all of this together, which of course affirms to us the ancient nature of the order of the books of the Tanakh and the accuracy of that ordering of books. Now, one might ask, what about the Apocrypha? Well, the Apocrypha, most of them belonged to the Ketuvim. Some of them may have belonged to the Nevi'im. But whatever the ordering of within that order of the Apocrypha at this point is lost. We don't know where those books went. But they didn't go at the end. Okay, they went throughout, and Second Chronicles was definitely the final book of the Tanakh. That doesn't mean that the Apocrypha were not originally part of the Tanakh. It just means that in the original ordering, the Apocrypha would have appeared before all of the Apocrypha would have appeared before Second Chronicles, and Second Chronicles would still be the final book. Now, this Gemara ties directly with something that Yeshua says when he's in Matthew chapter 23, verse 35. He says, "Upon you may come all the righteous blood which has been shed upon the earth, from Havel the righteous to Zechariah ben Berechiah, whom you slew between the temple and the altar." Actually, it's not Ben Berechiah, but Ben Jehadiah, and there's that's a scribal error, and we know that because Jerome, in his commentary to Matthew, says in the 4th century, "In the gospel which the Nazarenes use, instead of son of Berechias, we have found son of Jodiah, because a scribe at some point confused Zechariah, who is murdered in 2 Chronicles 24, with Zechariah that wrote the book of Zechariah. They're two totally different Zechariahs. However, Yeshua's point, when he says, "Upon you may come all the righteous blood which was shed upon the earth from Havel the righteous to Zechariah, whom you slew between the temple and the altar," comes back to this very idea that the word for blood in Genesis 4:10 was plural. As we read in the Mishnah, Sanhedrin 4:5, because it's not one murder and it's not one person, but all murders and all souls that are at stake here. And as we read in this Gemara, that the murder of Abel by Cain, Cain's murder of Abel, is the beginning. They're like bookends in the Tanakh. And the murder of Zechariah are tied together. Now, Yeshua doesn't say here how they were tied together exactly, although he does mention the righteous blood in reference to both of them. Yeshua is referring to this Gemara, to the, or at least to the oral law account of the death of Zechariah that is referred to in the Babylonian Talmud Sanhedrin 96b and in the Jerusalem Talmud in Ta'anit 69, that there was a similarity between the death of Zechariah and the death of Cain, in that in both cases the blood cried out for vengeance, or at least for justice, and that the two also then attest to all the murders that were committed from the beginning of the Tanakh to the end of the Tanakh. That's what Yeshua is saying, and that's what the Gemara is saying. They're singing the same tune because Yeshua is aware of this Gemara, and he is referencing it. And then also it says, "Whom you slew between the temple and the altar." Well, if you look in 2 Chronicles 24, verses 20 through 21, it only says that he was murdered at the temple. It doesn't say where in the temple that he was murdered. And that's why the Gemara in Ta'anit 69 poses the question, where did they kill Zechariah? Was it in the court of women or the court of Israel? And the answer was neither in the court of Israel nor in the court of women, but in the court of priests, which is what Yeshua says in Matthew 23, verse 35. He says that the murder took place between the temple and the altar. Now, 2 Chronicles doesn't say that. The Oral Torah says that. The Gemara says that. Yeshua is aware of the Gemara. He's aware of this Gemara. He's referring to this Gemara very clearly. And this Gemara helps us understand the words of Yeshua. The parallels are without question that Yeshua is clearly aware of and referencing this oral tradition. That's it for this week's episode of Gemara. If you're appreciating these studies, also please remember to support your Torah teacher. Help pay for your lessons. Please go to NazareneSpace.com. In the upper left-hand corner, there's a PayPal box where you can donate tithes, offerings, either one, through you can donate using the PayPal box with check, money order, checking account, with your checking account, or with a debit card or a credit card. If you want to pay by or donate by check or money order, you can do that by mailing them to Nazarene Judaism, P.O. Box 471, Hearst, Texas 76053. That's Nazarene Judaism, P.O. Box 471, Hearst, Texas 76053. Again, these studies are unique. These podcasts are unique. So if you're benefiting from them, please let us know. And frankly, please let us know by contributing and donating and supporting them. All right, that's it for this week, and we'll see you next week on Gemara. Shalom, shalom.
You've been listening to Gemara, sponsored by the Worldwide Nazarene Assembly of Elohim. Come visit our website at www.wnae.org. And also visit our social network at www.nazarenespace.com. Thank you for listening.